Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And welcome back. We are going to switch gears here. As we do that, I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. And we are going to have a conversation about why is it so difficult in Maryland and around the United States of America to truly transform our juvenile, correctional, and justice systems. For 17 years, I've been on the air. I've interviewed every secretary of juvenile services that existed in that time, been on the streets working with people, did broadcasts from inside juvenile correctional facilities, talked to every governor, person running for governor, about this issue. It stopped Kathleen Kennedy Townsend from beating Robert Ehrlich. One of the big reasons she lost was because of her mishandling of juvenile justice.
She was in charge.
She was in charge. Every good, decent person that has run that facility, Ken Montague, everybody else, has not been able to turn around. Right now we have somebody in place who's a reformer, and it's difficult to turn this battleship around. The question is, why is it so hard in America to do that? We are joined on the phone by State Senator Bobby Zirkin, who represents the 11th District in the Maryland State Senate and is one of the leaders in the battle for juvenile justice reform in the state legislature. In studio is Kimberly Armstrong, who's been a guest on the show for many, many years. And Kimberly Armstrong is founder and executive director of the Eric R. Vilnius Advocacy Institute, which works to reform the juvenile justice system in Maryland and has been active in this. Her son was murdered, and she's been fighting for juvenile justice reform for a long time. Angela Converse Janice is with us, who's Juvenile Justice Director for Advocates of Children and Youth. And Angela, good to have you back in the studio as well.
Thank you, Mark.
With Anthony and I here. Good to have you here, Bobby. Welcome.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
So let's start it off. And please, Anthony, take over. And Bobby, start off with why you think it is so hard to get this right.
Well, I got to say, I think there has been a lot that's been done. There was an article the other day, and I was kind of the lone voice out there talking about that there has been progress. This was, I think you used the analogy in your opening, this was a battleship. And, I've been down there for 12 years, and I vividly remember Ken Montague on the House Judiciary Committee railing at the secretaries and just how far we were from where we are today. I really would take exception to the fact that we haven't made progress. This is a very hard system. Obviously, you have very troubled youth, and a system that really was nowhere just a couple of years ago. Over the last 4 to 8 years, we've done really a lot. And has it been everything that I want? No, not even close. But there have been dramatic changes, and so I really would take exception to some of the comments that I saw in the Baltimore Sun. It's kind of the same old comments that we have done nothing. There has been statistical evidence of some change, and I think that the administration deserves credit for that. They are moving in the right direction. This is a battleship, as you said, and I think we have turned the battleship around, and it's kind of just, to continue the analogy, it's hard to get those motors running, but you've got a lot of people that have been working quite hard, and over the next hour I will talk about some of those things, but in general, I think we are moving finally in the right direction. I'm sure there will be some. Look, I've been the loudest critic of this system in the General Assembly over the last 12 years. I don't think anybody would dispute that. And so for me to say that we're making progress, I think people should listen at least a little bit, because we really, on a number of fronts, on the educational front, on the facility size front, on the issue of mentoring, we have made progress in most of the areas that I would like to have seen progress. And we're kind of moving down that path right now. So, I'm not going to be on the show today to criticize, because quite frankly, I think we've made some good moves over the last couple of years.
Senator Zirkin, I want to ask you real quick, and we'll bring our other guests into this conversation. This is Anthony McCarthy.
Hey, Anthony, how are you?
I'm well. Now, I appreciate, and certainly I have had you on my show. We've heard your voice for years. Yeah. Oftentimes, really, even taking leaders in your own party to task for focus and resources. But when we look at just the basics, the recidivism rate, when we look at some of the basics when it comes to juvenile justice and juvenile services in this state, I think what Mark was getting at is that we can't seem to make that – you're talking about progress, and progress is incremental, but we can't seem to make that breakthrough. I mean, we see kids in Baltimore City who not only through the process where they go through juvenile services, but then they have to go through the adult process as well because the programs aren't working. We're not reaching them. We're not changing the behavior. We're not making the progress, the breakthrough progress that we've got to – that's why governors have failed at this.
Yeah, no, and again, you and I have talked a number of times on this, and I don't disagree with you, except for on one thing. I mean, the only reason we even have recidivism rates at this point in time is because, you know, Governor O'Malley has instituted StateStat and is actually tracking these things. I mean, I remember just a couple of years ago getting into a fight with then-secretary about a bill which I thought was, I mean, it was shocking to me that we didn't have outcomes evaluations, that we didn't track. I mean, when people talk about the Missouri model, the one thing that I will always remember about Missouri is walking around with then Secretary Mark Stewart, and the secretary knew to a kid not how they were. I mean, the recidivism was the most basic thing that they knew. What they knew was if little Johnny had his scores dip. You know, his education or math scores had dipped in ABC facility. I mean, that's how much they knew about their kids. Just a couple of years ago, I had to fight like it was a war to get a bill to mandate outcomes evaluation. That was just a couple of years ago. And this guy, you know, Governor O'Malley has embraced that. I mean, so when I say that there's been progress, you are going to continue. If anybody thinks that there's some magic bullet that somehow we can – that's a bad analogy – that there's some magic wand that somehow – you know, by doing A, B, and C, you're going to fix this problem, that somehow you're not going to have trouble kids on the street. They're kidding themselves. This is a generation away from being truly fixed if we make all the right moves. And so, you know, when I say that there's been progress, it's really only been in the last couple of years. I mean, just to name a few, a couple of years ago, Anthony, as you remember, you had a DJS educational system that, you know, I had to fight like hell to get the State Department of Education to take over the DJS education system, because they wanted no part of it. The DJS education system was completely substandard and was getting far fewer resources. And so just, you know, we moved through legislation the whole education department of DJS into MSDE. That's still an ongoing process. That's had some effect. Up to a couple of years ago, we were talking about the size of Hickey, hundreds of kids. And this has been a state that, quite frankly, has had, on the one hand, these massive institutions which have been failures, on the one hand, and on the other hand, you've had and continue to have these kind of small mom-and-pop shop folks that are making money on the backs of these kids, these private providers, scattered throughout the state with little to no, you know, monitoring of what's going on. So we passed legislation, again, with Governor O'Malley's, really his leadership, to mandate that no facilities can be bigger than 48 beds. So we will no, in both the public and private sphere, so we will no longer, there can no longer be in this state of a facility larger than 48 kids. I mean, that's a major step. You'd think it's a no-brainer. I mean, to the general public, you'd say to yourself, well, why would you ever have a facility with 400 kids? But the reality is, just a couple of years ago, that was a real reality in this state. And the list really goes on, mentoring, aftercare, you know, and just even trying some things that were controversial, like the violence prevention initiative. I mean, there was definitely controversy with using GPS systems and so forth, but the focus that this administration's put on it is refreshing. It really is, because...
Bobby, let me just... Just for some time, let me turn to our guests here who have been dying to jump in and kind of may have a different point of view. Let me start with Kimberly Armstrong, and then we'll go to Angela Janice.
Sure.
You know, I heard you say something about, you know, the battleship is moving slowly. In the game, you sunk my battleship, and you get blown up. And I think the whole juvenile system needs to be blown up. Yes, you have made some good strides.
Can't you know what that means, Kimberly? What do you mean when you say that? What does it mean it can be blown up? Blown up, and then what?
I mean, because it just seems like it's just so dysfunctional. Sometimes you have to kill certain things off and start all over again before you can get it right. I mean, because it's so dysfunctional and so messed up from so many different levels that nobody knows where to start. Nobody knows really what's going on. Nobody can really, I mean, when I hear, you know, Senator Zirkin say things like all of the things that they have tried to do and the mom and pop providers, you know, making money off the backs of these kids, that's been going on for years. How do you fix it? When is it going to get fixed?
Well, let me.
You want an answer?
Well, no. I want to let everybody have it kind of go around here a little bit, and then we'll come back and answer the converse, Janice.
And I think as I listen to the speakers, and the original question was, like, why is it so difficult to get it right? I think of your guests, I'm the newest one to Maryland, and I think the problems that Maryland is experiencing is not unique. I've seen that in other places, in Louisiana, in D.C. And one thing that you see, there has to be a culture change across the board from our elected officials to our caseworkers that work with juveniles. The parents have to be engaged. We have to engage youth, and we have to invest in what we know works. And I think that that's one of the issues that we're still experiencing here, is that we can look outside of Maryland and we can see what works well. But when it comes to replicating those good practices or those evidence-based practices, that there's still a lag between realizing what works and actually funding those things.
Exactly.
Let's talk about what we think works and what doesn't. I mean, we already know that the places like Victor Cullen, 70% of the kids are rearrested.
Right.
And that's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it that we – well, let me start over here, and then we'll let Bobby Zirkin respond. I mean, what is it that you think should be done that's not being done? Specifically, what should the state do you think they're not doing? And then we'll talk about why it can or can't be done. I'm just curious what the two of you would say to that, Angela and then Kimberly.
I think my top three, that we have to invest in early intervention and prevention opportunities and try to divert youth from the juvenile justice system. If they make it through the front door of the juvenile justice system, often it's too late. Like, if we can get to young people before they first come into the juvenile justice system, that would make a tremendous impact. Second, I think we must prioritize reducing disproportionate minority contacts. It's just well known that that is a major issue here in Maryland and across the country. And I know Senator Zirkin mentioned aftercare. For the young people that must go into a residential facility, we have to improve the services that they receive while they're in the facility and also what they are receiving when they leave, so that that transition is more successful, because that's one of the key things that's contributing to the recidivism rate.
Go ahead, Kimberly. I'm sorry.
I mean, I would agree with Angela, especially from the prevention aspect, because when you talk to many of the families and the youth and the parents, before the children even get anywhere near the justice system, they are screaming and hollering for help. But it seems like they can't get any recourse or traction until the child either commits a crime or does something that ends them up into the system. And then once they get into the system, the parents still have a lack of knowledge, education, empowerment, or resources. They don't know where to go. So then the child ends up going into the deeper end of the system. Then from there, they end up going into the adult system. So we have to look at more of a prevention aspect and then intervention. That way you wouldn't have so much work that we would have to do on the back end working with Department of Juvenile Services.
You were going to say something?
I was going to ask Senator Zirkin and our guests. Do you remember when Governor Schaefer was governor, this issue just didn't seem to resonate. But when Glendenny came into office, there was so much talk, so much energy around reforming this system. When Governor Ehrlich became governor, he talked about juvenile services everywhere he went. He made it a, we know it was political. He was going after Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. But then even Bobby, Senator Zirkin, when he became governor, he talked about it. He pushed things. He asked Kim Montague to try to reform the process. And certainly Governor O'Malley has been making this a focus and a priority. But I guess where I was concerned, or not concerned, where I guess I want to raise the red flag is that, is it that the system is, as Kimberly said, so broken, Bobby, that we take any progress as progress? But when it's our children, don't we have to raise that bar a little bit more? Don't we have to really say, how do we change the culture and process? And I think oftentimes, I hate to say this, and I hope you don't take this personally because it's not aimed at you. Oftentimes, it's not the governors, whether it's Ehrlich or O'Malley, who fail. It's the leadership and the energy in your very legislature.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that last statement, although, I'm certainly not going to bash my colleagues. And I don't take any offense. Let me just take one step back and then answer that question. Kimberly, I think, said that nobody knows what to do. And you know, I would have agreed with you 8 or 9 years ago, but I would vehemently disagree with you now, and I'll tell you why. Over the last couple of years, and again, these things are taking shape. I hate sounding like the great apologist when it's so easy to come out and bash, but there are good things going on, and sometimes it doesn't make for good radio, and it certainly doesn't make for good print in the Baltimore Sun. But sometimes the good things have to be highlighted, too. I tried very hard talking to the Baltimore Sun, spent an hour on the phone talking about some of these things. None of them made it in because that article was only about the political ramifications, which unfortunately is what this boils down to. So let me give you some examples. You said, well, what needs to be done? I think your second guest there talked about early intervention, aftercare. Those things are obviously incredibly important. Let me give you some more, and these are some things that we have done. And this is largely based on what we saw in Missouri. And again, this Missouri model conversation is 6 years old. So this really has not, you know, we're really kind of at the infant stages of this. These small regional facilities where you take a kid from Baltimore and you have him not placed, if he's in the out-of-home placement, that kid is not placed halfway around the state or all the way around the state. So that, because, quite frankly, what Missouri has shown very clearly is that having the family involved in the treatment is incredibly important, and that you're spinning your wheels if you send the kid around the state or out of state, and then plop them back into the same environment without any kind of intervention with the family, as one of your guests said, with the family and the environment that they're at, which is where aftercare comes in. Group home reform, which you rarely hear about when talking about juvenile services, but most of the kids that are in out-of-home placement are not in Victor Cullen or are not in a state facility. They're in group home facilities that are either DJS or DHR, many of them saturated in either Prince George's County or Northwest Baltimore County, many of them with a profit motive. And up until 3 years ago, the state really had no clue what was going on in that system. I mean, it's reprehensible if you just look a couple of years ago, but now, because of some of these legislation and that we've passed, we've had tremendous group home reform. You have a statement of need legislation which was passed. There's a bill of rights now for the kids within the group homes that is legally enforceable. There's a summer education opportunity program. There's mandated outcomes evaluations, meaning that finally, and this is all, quite frankly, because of the leadership of the governor, because it was very hard to get these bills passed over the last decade. But when Martin, you know, came into office, he wanted this stuff done too. On the campaign trail, he talked about it, and he implemented it. I mean, he took the leadership of this. His secretary was sitting there at the table with me, you know, pushing these bills through, which made all the difference in the world. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's no one thing that's going to cure this system. I will tell you this. In the last couple of years, it is very easy to sit up and say, well, we need more of this and more of this and more of this and more of this. The reality is that over the last, you know, the last really 4 years, we have had economic troubles that have hit every single agency in the state of Maryland. Every single one has taken drastic cuts, except juvenile services. That's the one area in the state that has had a fairly significant increase. In the last 4 years, it's like 25-27% increase in programming at DJS. That is not the same for any other agency in the state, which really shows the focus. I mean, what we need is a Marshall Plan, but we don't have Marshall Plan money right now.
But you know, Senator, I don't mean to cut you off, but we need to have a keeping it real factor, and giving kudos to everyone who has done everything and trying to reform the system and all that good stuff. All of that sounds good, but we have to get down to what is really right for these children. Period. And it just comes to that. There is no real comprehensive aftercare, grassroots or community partnership, and flexible funding. I heard you mention about the mom and pops. You have a lot of people who are on the ground doing the work and getting things done, but a lot of them can't get the funding or the resources to do what is effective. And for you to say, or for us to think that in 2010, you can't keep track of data. Some of these kids are even sent across the country, Iowa, Missouri, all these different states, because Maryland does not have certain things in place for these children, so they are sent across the country where they can't see their children, where parents can't see their children. Why is that we put so much money in MST and FFT after the children get into trouble? Why not do that before they get into trouble? We spend triple the amount of money after the child has gotten into trouble and not put the money up in the forefront when it could prevent these children from going into the system in the first place. That's what the real problem is. Until we have a real approach effect to not have these children in a system, nothing will get done. And until you start to educate, empower, and then move parents in the community to really do something and hold our political people in power accountable the same way that you want to hold the families and these kids accountable, they need to be held accountable as well. And if they can't do the job and do the job right, then they need to be removed.
But before Senator Zirkin comes back, and we'll also come back to Angela Johnese, let me go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Anthony McCarthy and I kind of talk with all of you about the problems with reforming juvenile justice in the state of Maryland. Chris in Catonsville, you're on the air. All right, Chris, you there?
Good afternoon.
You're on the air.
Chris.
Where to start? I worked at one of the group homes that you're talking about as the educational liaison, so I'm in the schools and in court with the kids and everything. And I kind of agree with everything that's been said, from the blow-it-up approach and start completely over, because what no one talks about is the structure of our society needs people to fail so that they can form that lower stratus. That needs to be talked about. Nobody talks about that, but then we always wonder why there's so many people at the bottom. The other part of it is the wraparound services are not coordinated. That if you figure, if you look at schools as a funnel, every kid has to go through a school, no matter what issues they're having at home and everything else. So here's a target-rich environment to identify kids that have issues, and they're not being identified in these areas. Also, kids are looked at almost as a pie that you cut up in. Everybody takes a piece instead of treating the whole kid.
Right.
Excuse me. We're talking about them right now with juvenile services and juvenile services and social services and juvenile justice. Nobody talked about schools. This is all one picture, right, where everybody has to get together, the schools, the aftercare, the social services, because they need counseling. Some of them are medications that cancel each other out. School doesn't know what's going on in the home environment. The home environment doesn't care about school. The wraparound services need to come into play, and they can be identified in the schools, because even if they act up, they don't want to go by law. Every kid has to be in school.
Comment?
I just want to say he's absolutely right when you talk about the educational system. When you, from my research, because I work with a lot of the parents, most of these parents, the first contact that these children usually have is in school with the school police, and it's usually from suspension around a fight or something that could really be handled through some type of conflict mediation or some other point before it even gets to DJS. Most of these kids, the first point of contact is at school and before they even get into the Department of Juvenile Services.
But can I ask the question? I asked Senator Zirkin and Angela Kamenetz as well. So, but what does that have to do with juvenile services? What is DJS supposed to do with that?
Because first, what you have to understand this is that if my son and your son get into a fight, right, and if I choose to press charges against your son, they go down to the Department of Juvenile Services and they have what they call the intake process. And at the intake process, they can determine or they can say, well, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Your child may have to go to a program or not be in a fight or not get involved with someone. So it has a lot to do with it.
Senator? I mean, are we emphasizing the wrong things in juvenile services? Should we be emphasizing more upfront pretrial work, counseling, less going to court?
All those things, sure, of course. But I think that there has been a much more, I mean, not only do I think, yes, I think that there should be a much more of a focus on early intervention, that obviously all of the research will tell you that if you can get the kid, the earlier you get the kids, it's not rocket science, the earlier you get the kids, the better your outcomes are going to be if you can keep them out of the deep end. The concern, of course, is that if you don't focus on the deep end, then you got yourself some trouble, because the kids that are at the deep end are the ones who are going to get out of there and go commit some violent offense in the streets of Baltimore. And so you can't neglect one without the other. But clearly, I certainly agree with your other guests that the more you can do with early intervention programs at schools, even as early as pre-K and kindergarten programs, I mean, all of that is a factor. My focus in terms of legislation has been on the deep end, because quite frankly, our recidivism rate for kids that end up in the deep end was so horrifyingly high, you know, just 12 years ago, that just, you know, so I've focused on that and making sure that when the kids end up in the deep end, and for sure, some number of kids need to be in facilities, need to be in out-of-home placement. I mean, to think that all these kids can be treated at home is just, you know, Disney World. So, you know, that's been my focus. But, you know, in answer to your question, of course, I mean, dealing with them at the front end is obviously the best way to go.
Before we go back to the phones, a lot of people are calling in. Angela, do you want to make a comment here?
No, I would just add, when we talk about fixing the juvenile justice system, you have to start at that school level, that early intervention level. And it's something that we need our leadership to prioritize when we talk about funding decisions, because Senator Zirkin talked about the increase in DJS funding as the state saw a budget crisis. But at the same time, you saw severe cuts to all the community services, to those services that young people would be referred to at the school level, at the prevention level. And so the budget needs to line up with those spoken priorities. It's one thing to say that that's what we know we need to do, but we need our budget to line up. Even when we're talking about limited dollars, if those limited dollars...
What do you mean when you say the budget has to line up? What does that mean?
I'm sorry, Mark, can I ask your speaker, your other guest, a question?
Rick, yeah, because
I just was wondering, because when she just said that there were dramatic cuts in the amount of money going to early intervention programs, why do you say that? Can you give me the and without saying anything that would fit on a bumper sticker, can you tell me what the number was that you think was cut in last year's budget?
I don't know the exact number.
Well,
I can talk
you,
about...
If you don't know the number, then how can you say that there was a dramatic cut? Tell me at least a roundabout number.
I know that there were cuts to the local management boards. I know that there were programs that DJS itself cut during their fiscal year.
Let me tell you, because I sit on the Budget and Tax Committee, that what you just said, with all due respect, is incorrect. That there has been an increase in the Department of Juvenile Services, and there has been an increase in the budget for early intervention programs. So to get on the radio and to say that there have been dramatic cuts in early intervention programs is just factually incorrect. That's why I wanted to know if there was a number you had behind that. I knew that there wasn't, because it's not true. I'm sorry, I hate to be a little confrontational, but look, it is very easy for people to get out and scream and yell and just make things up. It's a lot harder to talk about... Look, I think there is a lot that needs to be done.
Well,
don't get on the air and say things that are factually incorrect.
I do know this for a fact, that the Department of Juvenile Services did cut funding for some community programs that actually went into the facilities. Okay, now, I don't know the exact amount, but I do know they were cut.
Well, I can
because
tell you
one of them was the Community Conferencing Center, and their budget had gotten cut. I also know that the Boys and Girls Club, I think, got like $400,000, and some of the other programs got cut. I don't know of any facility or any place in Baltimore City that has a boys and a girls club where these kids, that when they come out into the community, that they can go to. I'm not saying the Boys and Girls Club is not a good organization, but that is a known fact.
Well, can we finish what you're saying? I'm going to jump in here before anybody else does, but can we finish what you're saying?
That's a known fact. And if you can tell me that did not happen, then you're not being factual as well, because we had a community forum.
Let me jump in the middle here.
I'll tell you what you can do is, I'll give you a phone number when we're off the air that you can call the Budget and Tax Committee, and I'll get you a copy of the budget. So the next time you get on the radio, you can say things that are factually correct.
Well, are you saying that the community conferencing budget did not get cut along with some other community organizations? I don't know the exact number, but I know it's a fact.
Senator and Kimberly, let me jump in for a minute. I think part of the issue here is, and I want to open the phones again because people are really dying to get in this conversation, but I think that there are two things here that are both factual, at least from my understanding. I do not have the numbers in front of me. A, that the budget was increased for Department of Juvenile Services, and I think Senator Zirkin is correct about that. What you were talking about being cut, though, is I've had long conversations with people like Lauren Abramson, who runs a community conferencing center, who had all the proof that the program they were working on was actually cutting down on kids going into the deep end of the system. They were creating a new remarkable program, but its funds were taken away and given to an unproven group, the Boys and Girls Club of Maryland, and other groups. I think the question is, where the money is being invested is the issue. And the money was taken away from successful programs and no longer allowed to be used. And I think that was people who were in the kind of advocacy community were kind of aghast that community conferencing lost its funding when they
along
were
with
one
some
of those,
other organizations.
Yeah, along with other
that
groups
were doing good
so
work.
That I think was what
good
was,
work
was being said here with Senator Zirkin.
No, and I know Lauren Abramson, and I think the work that they do at community conferencing is incredible. So the fact that, you know, again, and those aren't decisions that are made down at the General Assembly.
No, they're not. But I mean,
so,
those.
So and that is a decision that I certainly did not support, and I wrote a letter against as well. So that's a specific decision, and I really am not sure exactly what went into that decision. We weren't a part of that, but what I was commenting on was, again, you know, this is about the juvenile justice system at large, you know, in its totality. And, you know, again, there are mistakes that are made, and that certainly, I believe, is one thing. I think Lauren's incredible, and I think her program is incredible. And, again, there's a lot that needs to be done. But to come out, as your guest did, and kind of, you know, scream and yell about how they're cutting, you know, dramatically cutting early intervention programs and all the rest, it's just not right, and it does a disservice to your listeners to hear that. There, again, the number is 27%. That's not a huge increase. We need a lot more than 27%. But when every other agency
okay, but Bobby, but I guess,
state is getting whacked, I mean, that's pretty
bad. No. But I think the issue here is, though, when we talk about why we can't change the juvenile justice system, I am going to turn the callers here because people are dying to get in this conversation. We're ignoring our callers calling in from all over the state. Is that the problem is the money and how it's invested in early intervention is the issue. And it's not – you can't make those decisions.
Right.
But people who run the system should be questioned as to why they're cutting back on successful programs and the money is going elsewhere. I mean that's – I think that is an important question.
Sure. I don't disagree. You and I have talked about that, and I don't disagree with you at all.
Let me be fair and go to the callers 1, 2, 3 here and get some quick thoughts. 410-319-8888. Who's been on the longest? We're going to go to Jay Ray Cameron very quickly. Jay, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Jay from Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Janitha McNair. I'm a superintendent
in
the Department of Juvenile Services. Kim knows me. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
And hello to the panel. And I just wanted to speak on the changes that I've seen in the department over the 8 years that I've been there. And I've been at 7 facilities. Two of which were facilities that were under federal oversight and successfully came out of those, out of the oversight with Department of Justice, and one of them was Hickey. And what I want to say is that definitely I have seen change and shifts in the paradigm at the Department of Juvenile Services, at the legislature level, with how we've approached the changes that we need to make within the department. I think where we need to continue to work is having those community supports with the families and making sure that when our children are released back into the community, that they are going to have successful wraparound services. And I know that DJS is committed to making sure that we place children with the appropriate services that's going to contribute to their success. Now, what Chris had said earlier about early prevention, a lot of that is definitely, the caller Chris mentioned, a lot of that is definitely out of the hands of DJS, and I do think we need to partner more with schools and with the other community-based services to identify children who might have family issues, who might be candidates for FFT or MST early on before they're delinquent or have committed criminal acts. Maybe we can identify these children in schools and start to give them these family services before they get to the department. I'm sorry?
No, finish with you because we don't have much time. I want to get a couple other callers before we end,
okay,
end the hour.
But by the time the children get to us, we have to be responsive to whatever their needs are and what they present with when they get to us.
Right.
And I do believe, in closing, that the department has made significant strides in being more focused on what the child needs to be more successful. I do think we've started to do that.
Jay, thanks for holding on. And let's go to Ray. You're on the air. Ray, you're on the air. Very quick thought.
Hi,
Ray. Go ahead.
I just want to make one comment. I work in the system, and it really frustrates me. I think if we look at the bigger picture of the whole system itself, I think we need that. We need to look at the idea of decriminalization of drugs, and I think that if that were done, maybe there would be money freed up to go towards other services in the system statewide or countrywide, nationwide.
Ray, you have a point. There should be a debate in the show very soon because I think the question of the role that we have in drugs and putting kids in jail for drugs is a huge piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
And still the disparity between what happens to black kids and white kids in Maryland and around the country convicted of cocaine versus other drugs and how you use cocaine. Cameron, you're on the air.
Mark. Good evening, Mark.
Hi, Cameron.
And all your guests, good evening. I think that this has been a spirited discussion, but I'd like to add in that the majority of young people that are still housed in the juvenile facilities are children of color, number one. Number two, the majority of children that are locked up in juvenile facilities are nonviolent offenders. There are children that need to be locked up, but the ones that are nonviolent could be helped in a community program. And number three, these children, Mark, all over the city of Baltimore and around the state of Maryland are trying to get paid. Maybe Senator Zirkin and his colleagues could come together. We're in a recession, but there's still a great deal of building going on. Let me make a suggestion. Would they consider allowing a certain percentage of young people from juvenile facilities to work as apprentice trainees at every construction site around the state of Maryland? These young people are trying to get paid. If we could get some more money into their hands, I think we'd have a lot less confusion.
And Cameron, quick question before you hang, because we have to wrap up. Where's the stats that say the majority of kids who are in juvenile institutions in the state of Maryland are there for nonviolent crimes?
I think Ms. Conyers could help you find that, but that's just a fact. The majority of young people in the system are there for nonviolent offenses.
Let's pick up on that comment on our next show. We'll start the next conversation off with that and see what that means and analyze that and ask Senator Bobby Zirkin, who has been leading the charge for reform in the state house and state legislature, to join us again. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bobby.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much. And thanks, and you know, if I could just say for you, because I remember years ago, you know, you've been doing this for a long time, but there weren't a lot of people listening just a few years ago, and I think that you have you should take a lot of pride in the fact that that you really started this ball rolling years ago, and The good news is there are a lot of people talking about this issue now.
Thanks for that, Bobby Zirkin. Thank you. Kimberly Armstrong, great to have you in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Angela Converse, Johnny's, good to have you here.
Thank you.
My brother.
Always great to be with
Anthony
you.
McCarthy. We will come back. We're going to pick up on that conversation. Let's pick up on the conversation about are more nonviolent or kids in juvenile institutions there for nonviolent offenses? If so, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
And let's get down to that one, the next conversation we have on juvenile justice. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Richard Good, Felicia Faison, and welcoming Stephanie Mavrones. Her first day working with us. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and to podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, get information about all of our guests, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.